ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and share it with our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We wanted to touch on some of the Islamic laws about the dress code, and let me begin with the criterion for the conspicuous clothes. What are the criteria, Sheikh Jawad, for what it is that we call conspicuous clothes?
Well, conspicuous clothes differ from place to place and from one country to another country. Generally speaking, there are the types of clothes that are not suitable for wearing in terms of color, in terms of design, and in terms of the way they are worn. And there are other reasons which may constitute the conspicuous cloth. Sometimes they use the term the dress of fame, okay? And anyhow, when a dress is considered in common view to be offensive, then one should not wear it. And it does not make any difference whether you are, the person who wears it is a man or a woman. In either case, one should not wear a conspicuous cloth.
So conspicuous actually refers to the notion of a kind of offensive. Insulting type of clothes, right?
Yeah. His Eminence...
Like insulting to the culture of the people?
Insulting to the individual himself, uh-huh. Because as an individual, you are a dignified person. You are a person who possesses dignity. Mm-hmm. And therefore, one should not degrade himself in the eye of the people. His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, says that the yardstick is that when the person wears such clothes, they would definitely attract the attention of other people, so much so that their look would be conspicuous.
Mm-hmm, I see. There is another, question that I would like to ask you, and I want you to share your knowledge with our audience, and that is about the sound of the step of women's shoes, actually. Sometimes as you have noticed that, there are heels which are made for the shoes.
Sure.
And usually there's some kind of metal used in it, right?
Yes.
And it creates a kind of or generates a kind of stepping sound, right?
Yes.
When they are walking. I just want to ask you what the ruling the religious law about this is, if it is, problematic or not?
That's a good question. Of course, there's no harm in it, per se, or in itself, there's no objection to a woman wearing such high heel shoes, provided that, they do not draw the attention of other people and they do not lead to vile consequences. For example, if a woman wears such shoes with the intention of attracting, the attention of other people, the strangers' attention, of course, that is problematic and it makes it, of course, haram, because one should not do anything to attract the attention of non-mahram men to herself, for example, especially when it comes to women.
Right.
Yes. So it's not only about shoes. Even when you, for example, when a woman wants to wear perfume her intention is to attract non-mahram's attention, again, it becomes problematic.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/Ian. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the religious laws about conspicuous clothes and the dress code. Well, Sheikh Javid, you know, I asked you about what they are that we call conspicuous clothes. I'd like to ask you a kind of relevant question here. Is it permissible for a young woman to wear clothes that are dark blue in color? You know, having a specific color, you know, does it actually contribute to being, let's say, a conspicuous clothes or a part of it?
Well, as I said in the beginning, you know, it depends largely on the culture and the country where you are. For example, when you go to India, you see Muslim ladies wearing colorful dresses, mm-hmm. and that's very common. No one is taken aback when he sees women wearing red dresses, yellow dresses, blue, dark blue, black dresses, because you see, India is a land of color, actually, when you see. And the same dress might be very much, you know, strange. It might attract the attention of of strangers elsewhere in another country, like, for example, in Iran. So generally speaking, according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, there is no objection to wearing such clothes with such color. You know, per se, there is no problem, unless it, of course, attracts the attention of other people and leads to bad consequences, in which case one should not wear them. Mm-hmm. If there is no such vile consequences, consequence, of course, there is no problem and there is no objection to a woman wearing such dress.
Mm-hmm. I see. You know, in wedding ceremonies, Sheikh Javid, or something of the same kind, is it permissible for women actually to wear transparent or tight clothes that, you know, show the contours of the bodies or other types of dresses that show, you know, some parts or most parts of the women's body?
Well, there's no doubt as to the fact that a woman should not wear close-fitting dresses or see-through dresses because they reveal her body, especially when there are non-mahram men around, there are strangers around, and especially when it's a mixed wedding, because you're talking about wedding, and in weddings, of course, ladies wear sometimes, you know, quite transparent dresses. If there's no, you know, if there are no men around, of course, there's no problem to, there's no problem in wearing such dresses. You know, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that if women are insulated from the gaze of men who are non-mahram to them and are immune to falling victim to vile deeds, there is no harm in their wearing such clothes. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it is not permissible.
So if it is a woman-only party, there is no problem with it?
There is no problem.
I see.
Because women can take off their dresses, even in the in the presence of other women, of course, there's no objection to a woman doing that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, for joining us on the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mama Jawad, signing off. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Political analyst Kutzai Mutosi has said Western aid is used to manipulate Africa. He said the EU gave Zimbabwe money with the aim of influencing the country's recent elections. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, financial aid given to Zimbabwe by the EU was a tool for influencing and manipulating the country's recent elections. Political analyst Kutzai Mutosi has told RT recently. Mutosi said, the aid which was given by the EU to the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission was not really in good faith. He added, they were using it to manipulate and coerce this Zimbabwean Electoral Commission so that they may achieve their own foreign policy goals. The political analyst stated, no one asked them for the money. They brought it voluntarily and with the aim of trying to have some influence on the elections. When that didn't happen, they are throwing a tantrum. Zimbabwe held general elections in August to elect the president and legislators. The incumbent president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, retained his post by defeating challenger Nelson Chamisa in elections in which allegations of irregularities emerged. The EU announced recently that it will not provide $5 million in financial support to Zimbabwe due to the country's disputed elections, which were criticized for lacking independence and transparency. Mnangagwa criticized covert actions in Africa by Western regimes during his speech at the UN General Assembly in New York recently. He also condemned the use of unilateral and illegal sanctions as a foreign policy tool, citing those imposed on Zimbabwe and Cuba. According to Press TV report, Russia has said it is against foreign interference of any type in African countries in Niger following the recent events in the Sahel state. The Kremlin said potential interference of non-regional powers such as the United States in Niger's domestic affairs was unlikely to help improve the situation. Niger's elite presidential guard seized President Mohamed Bazoum and sequestered him in the presidential palace on July 26. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters recently, it is unlikely that the intervention of non-regional forces is capable of changing the situation for the better. He said, Russians were monitoring the situation very closely. We are concerned about the tension in Niger, and we continue to favor a swift return to constitutional normality without endangering human lives. Niger's Western partners and regional allies, including former colonial power France, have imposed sweeping sanctions on the country in an effort to mount international pressure. The ousted president himself has appealed to the international community, the United States in particular, to intervene militarily and restore his presidency. According to Politico, recently, French President Emmanuel Macron has announced that French troops would be withdrawn from Niger in the next couple of months in the wake of the recent events in the Western African country this summer. The military withdrawal from Niger comes after French troops were ousted from neighboring Burkina Faso and Mali. Amid growing anti-French sentiment across the continent and military failures in containing terrorism in the Sahel region. According to French authorities, Macron also said France would imminently withdraw its ambassador, who had been living under effective house arrest in the French embassy in the capital, Niamey. Macron said during an interview with French TV channels, "France has decided to withdraw its ambassador. In the next hours, our ambassador and several diplomats will return to France." He added, Macron also said the military cooperation between France and Niger was over, and that French troops would return before the end of the year. In the weeks and months to come, we will consult with the putschist because we want this to be done peacefully, he said.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Back to Reality. Well, in this program, we have a roundtable discussion. We'll listen to what is being said and deduce the best things out of it. That's how we come back to reality. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to be with two special guests, Sister Bida and Brother Mehdi. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you for being here. I would want you guys to give a small intro about yourself.
I am Bita, as you all know, and I have the pleasure to be here again with you. I'm Iranian and a medical student.
Welcome, Bita.
Thank you.
Okay, Brother Mehdi, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Muhammad Reza Mehdi, and I'm from Pakistan. I'm studying commentary of Quran.
Good. I was born a Muslim, but I would say in my teens or like in my later teens, I actually got acknowledged with what Islam really is, with the narrations, with the verses, when I started understanding them. And I was like, I wish I could drag everyone around me towards this beautiful religion. What would you do if you want people to attract to the religion of Islam?
Islam says that if you make Islam in your life, do the things that Islam says, okay, the people automatically attracted to them, okay? And this is the way of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that he was kind to the people, and he was helping people in this way.
He would only practice Islam and people would get attracted.
Exactly.
So the key point Brother Matthew is trying to make here, practice Islam and people will get attracted on their own. That's how our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was.
Actually, I had a blessing to be born Muslim. Be born in a Muslim family.
That is a blessing.
And that is a blessing for sure, to be born in a family that will teach you and practice all the principles of this beautiful religion. And even you can see some people who convert to this religion, and there are some beautiful people. I love them because, they had a lot of research in that. They studied a lot of books, narrations, and so on. And I love the knowledge they have about our religion.
Right.
That most of the time we don't have it because we take it for granted, unfortunately, that we were born Muslim. And the thing is, it's a lifestyle. It's a way of living, okay?
Right.
When you accept the Sharia of Islam, it means that you accept a kind of lifestyle that you believe is perfect, okay? There is everything in Islam, and every concept that you can imagine, if you can think of, it doesn't matter whether it is personal or social or whatever, it is discussed in our religion, okay? So I think this is the most important fact that we can tell to other people who are non-Muslims in order to just persuade them in order to be Muslim, okay? Because we are looking for something which is meaningful, which is perfect, which can help us in every way, spiritual, physical, everything. Okay, nowadays we have science, we have technology, but we feel an emptiness, we feel a lack of something, which is the spiritual part that we are ignoring. And Islam can, have all these aspects together in its heart. Okay, so I think this is enough for one person to at least have this motivation for searching in this beautiful religion.
Well, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am with Sister Bida and Brother Mehdi, and we are discussing how do we attract people towards Islam.
Islam is not a religion, just we call it religion, okay?
Yeah. Because, it's a way of life.
Yes, it's coming from God, that's why. But it's a way of life, it's a way of thinking even, okay? If you see, if you read about Islam, okay, you can see that Islam is going in every corner of your life.
Yeah,
the way of thinking, the way of talking, the way of living, the way of eating, everything. Even a little thing they talked about.
Right.
If the people see that, we are living in the best part of our life. Mm-hmm. We're living like this. Like we're forgiving people. If someone is doing a bad thing to you, you're forgiving and forgetting about that. Okay, they start loving
getting
that.
Getting attracted to
yes.
Exactly.
If you read Quran, you can understand about the science, that it's so effective, that they know about everything, like how a human being is burning, how the space is going on.
We have a miracle here, which is Holy Quran. And look how beautiful it is that the miracle of a religion is its book. It's knowledge, it's words, and I think it's a miracle itself, want to look at it in this way. And it is telling us that we have a really strong emphasis on knowledge. If you want to be a better person, if you want to practice the real Islam, you have to have the knowledge of it, okay? Go for that, search for that. And you have a limited time here Don't waste it on searching for schools of thoughts. You have the best one here at your hands. We have to make other people understand that what the real Islam is.
Yeah.
Okay? We have to elaborate it. We have to show it. We have to use all of the social medias here to tell other people what the real Islam is and what you can see, what you are watching. I don't know, Muslim people or whatever they are doing, the governments and so on, if they are making mistakes, this is not Islam. I think, Islam itself is a pure religion. It's beautiful, and everything in it is true based on whatever Allah Almighty wants you to be.
Okay.
And the goal of being here in Islam is dissatisfaction of Allah Almighty. If you think you are in a way that Allah Almighty is satisfied with whatever you're doing, then it's true. It's the right way. Okay. But unfortunately, as Muslims, we're human beings make mistakes. And sometimes we persist in our mistakes. Okay.
Right.
We think that the real Islam is what we are practicing, which is not.
Right.
Okay, so I think we have to work on that so much. The way you are showing your religion is important.
Yes,
show it
is.
With your kindness, with your beauty, and, you know, with everything that is mentioned there.
I have a question that, when do you need advertisement? It's an example, okay? When you're selling something and you just say, okay, I cannot sell that. Okay, I have to advertise
it.
Yes.
You don't have the audience.
But here you're not, because you're not
selling
proving something. You're just telling the truth.
Yes.
You are introducing, okay? And, you know, sometimes I think that it's not right to say, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not right to say this one, that, okay, these are Muslims. Do not look at the Muslims. No, the people, they don't think like that. They think that if you wanted to understand a thought, a religion, or a people, you have to see the,
look at the people,
the society.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Yes.
All right, so Brother Mehdi is of the view that when there are many people around the world who want to, when they want to research about a religion, they want to, they look at the people who practice it.
Yeah, for sure. And they will look at you as the sign of your religion, as
right.
a symbol of your religion, okay? The thing I'm trying to say is that we have to work on this part, which is our responsibility, to be the best Muslim, to be the best version of us that can show to the world, okay?
Right.
And when we do our duty, then I think the real Islam will be spread itself, okay? There is no need to try more harder at all. That's okay. Just be the true Islam. That's
right.
it.
So be the true Islam yourself and people will get attracted to it. We will discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio.
As God says that we protect Quran, we protect this religion, and just you have to be yourself. You have, you know,
work
first
on yourself.
Of all, I mean that, you know, you have to think about yourself
right.
in this religion. Okay, you have to make yourself, build yourself, and be the best version of yourself,
exactly.
okay, in this religion. And you shouldn't, you know, and you make this, with this kind of thinking, you're making a society like this. Why? Because you're making kids, you have kids,
yeah.
you have wife, you're making them like this, and you have some people that they know you, they started to be in your color.
Like you, yeah. They start getting into your color. They start getting mixed with you. And
yeah.
as Brother Mehdi put it very beautifully, the way you are, you can impact your family. You can impact the people who are around you. Coming back to you, Sister Bita.
Yeah, actually, this reminds me of this sentence that be the change you want to see in the world, okay?
Wow.
If you want to see Islam is spread around the world, just practice it in your own way and make yourself perfect and put yourself first. If you are the good version of whatever you want others to be, then you're going to make it. That's
right.
it. And I want to end everything as a conclusion with this beautiful verse from Holy Quran that is Allah not enough for his servant? Just ask yourself this question, and I think this is the whole essence
Crux.
Of Islam, and
right.
that's it. Thank you.
I would like to add one thing. I have had the pleasure to be on the Arbain walk. We met a Christian man who was moving towards the shrine of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We started asking him, what dragged you here to learn about Imam Hussein alayhi salam? He was like, you know, this crowd, these people around, I am still learning and I have learned a lot and I want to see this love for Hussein that is being showered all over the Karbala, you know, from Najaf to Karbala. People are generous. They are giving away everything they have in the way of Abu Abdullah. I want to learn what is this. So when you are showing generosity, when you are showing that care, when you're showing that love, for the love of Abu Abdullah. So he had seen the behavior in his friend that would attract him. I would want to learn about his behavior, where this behavior roots from. And that rooted from the religion of Islam. And that's what dragged him that many kilometers in this walk. And I would say practice what Islam says. And then people will get attracted to the religion of Islam themselves. Practice what Abu Abdullah al-Hussein did, stand against oppression. You know, be kind, be true in all the situations. The religion of Islam, when it gets practiced, people see your behavior. People see the way you act. People see the way you behave. People see your manners and they do get attracted to it. So be the best version of yourselves. Be the best version that Islam has taught you. Because day by day, tabakan and tabak, we are heading towards meeting Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So we have to be very aware. We have to be best versions of ourselves so that people do get attracted themselves. So practice is a key point. Practice it. And the rest is you don't need to do anything. Thank you so much for being with us, both of you.
Thank you.
In case you want to listen to our programs again, go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. Go to the tab, Call of Islam, and you'll find an archive of our programs there. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam. In case you have any questions, queries, or comments for us, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رازقة
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي التي أمة رايزك لتصي دليلتك وانسك.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
An-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was this beautiful source of light in an era full of darkness and oppression. His Eminence, the 10th divinely appointed Imam, was the honorable direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. He was the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam, and he was the grandson of the 8th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha, alayhi salam. Imam al-Hadi, alayhi salam, was the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and the 10th divinely appointed successor to the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam opposed the tyrannical rulers of his time. And if Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam had humored or flattered the kings of his age, they would not have imposed such a severe house arrest on His Eminence in the city of Samarra, or they would not have economically blockaded Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. But despite these severe measures that were taken against Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, His Eminence, the 10th divinely appointed Imam, preferred the contentment and the satisfaction of the Almighty Allah as well as the best interests of the Muslim Ummah.
Parts of Ziyara text of Jamaatul Kabira, issued by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabihit tuja wa a'lamit tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-du'ati ila Allah wal-adillahi ala marudatillah.
Peace be upon the callers of Allah, the leaders to Allah's pleasure, the abiders of Allah's decree, the perfect in love for Allah, the sincere in professing Allah's oneness, the manifester of Allah's orders and prohibitions, and Allah's honored bondmen who speak not until He has spoken and act by His command. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio.
So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues and the conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. One of these really interesting conversations is not necessarily between Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam and someone else, but it is actually between two scholars of the era. So Ibn Sabbag al-Maliki, he says that there was a conversation between these two scholars that he was listening to and he was a part of. And in this conversation, they happened to start to talk about Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. So one of these scholars, he said to the other scholar while Ibn Sabbag al-Maliki was there, he said that the virtue of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has established its domes on the galaxy and stretched its ropes on the stars. No excellence is counted unless with Imam al-Hadi's conclusion, and no nobility is mentioned unless Imam al-Hadi's details and totality is spoken of, and no high quality is regarded unless the proofs of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam appear on it. And then the other scholar continues and added that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam had the most liberal of qualities which weren't seen in anyone else, and that glory governed Imam al-Hadi's lofty nature, which was so incredibly pure. His nature and his morals were so pleasant, his conduct was fair, and his qualities were virtuous. And in the end, they concluded that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam had a pure soul and high determination, such that no one among the men resembled him in this respect. In this conversation that Ibn Sabbag al-Maliki heard and was a part of amongst these scholars, we find the great respect and the great awe and the beautiful qualities and attributes that these scholars bring up about Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Us being the followers and the supporters and the lovers of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, we too should live in a manner where other people speak highly about us, our behaviors, our manners, you know, our speaking, our talking, our living is such that when we are not present, other people have praise for us, and we make our imams and our religion and our school of thought proud, so that when other people see us, they are honored to be in the presence of a follower of Islam, a follower of the Shia, and a follower of the Messenger of Allah's Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. This is Dialogue Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight.
British private sector output has dropped in September, prompting firms to cut off staff. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Thank you. RT noted, according to data published by S&P Global recently, companies in the UK's private sector have been downsizing their workforce at the fastest rate since the global financial crisis, apart from the COVID-19 pandemic lockdowns, as output fell in September. The latest flash S&P Global Composite Purchasing Managers Index PMI figure for the UK slipped to 46.8, down from 48.6 in August, and reached a 32-month low. The reading was well below the 50 mark, which separates growth from contraction, and lower than economists expected, S&P said. Chris Williamson, chief business economist at S&P Global Market Intelligence, warned, "The disappointing PMI survey results for September mean a recession is looking increasingly likely in the UK. The steep fall in output signaled by the flash PMI data is consistent with GDP contracting at a quarterly rate of over 0.4%, with a broad-based downturn gathering momentum to hint at few hopes of any imminent improvement." The British jobs market is facing an abrupt turnaround, prompting companies to shed staff at the fastest pace since the aftermath of 2008 global financial crisis, excluding the pandemic, S&P said. Williamson added, "A major concern in the inflation outlook has been wage growth, but with the survey now signaling the sharpest fall in employment since 2009, wage bargaining power is being eroded rapidly." S&P concluded, "Overall, private sector business activity in the UK fell at the fastest rate since March 2009 as the cost of living crisis and surging borrowing costs dented demand." According to The Guardian, Britain's economy is at growing risk of recession, with industry figures showing the sharpest monthly fall in private sector activity outside of the COVID-19 pandemic since the financial crisis. In a sign that higher interest rates and the cost of living crisis are combining to depress consumer demand, the latest snapshot from S&P Global and the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply, SIPS, showed a steep drop in the UK's dominant service sector and manufacturing output in September. Aside from pandemic disruptions to the economy, the latest decrease in the Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, was the steepest since March 2009. Recently, the Bank of England halted its most aggressive round of interest rate increases in decades, amid growing concerns over the economy, holding borrowing costs at 5.25% after 14 previous rises. It said it was given early sight of the S&P Global SIPS data before its decision. According to Financial Times, UK economic activity has fallen at the fastest pace since January 2021. According to a closely watched survey that suggests the chances of a recession have increased, with service sector activity weakening and a contraction in manufacturing, the S&P Global SIPS Purchasing Managers Index fell to 46.8 in September, down from 48.6 in August, and the lowest in 32 months. The pound dropped 0.5% against the dollar to $1.22, a six-month low. The PMI figures were worse than 48.7 forecast by economists polled by Reuters and well below 50, which indicates a majority of businesses reporting a contraction in activity. The survey also showed an abrupt deterioration in private sector employment numbers. Chris Williamson, chief business economist at S&P Global Market Intelligence, said the disappointing PMI flash UK composite output for September meant a recession is looking increasingly likely in the United Kingdom. He added that the recent figures were consistent with gross domestic product contracting at a quarterly rate of more than 0.4%, with a broad-based downturn gathering momentum. However, some economists warn that the PMI indices are not an exact predictor of output.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi...
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhide kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an analysis and introduction into the thoughts and scholarly life of the most outstanding companions of the infallible Imams during the history of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mahdi and Shaykh Fadai. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh Fadai. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sayyid Mahdi, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having us.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the tabi'in, a person whose presence in the history of Islam after the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam attracts many attention, Mukhtar ibn Abi Ubaidah Saqafi. Sayyid Mahdi, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the early life of Mukhtar al-Saqafi. Who was he?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So Mukhtar al-Saqafi, of course, he is very famously known as being the leader of one of the uprisings that were conducted to take revenge for the martyrdom and the murder of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions. It is said that he was originally from the city of Ta'if, which is north of Mecca and Medina in the Hijaz, which is present-day Saudi Arabia. It's also in some of the sources we find that he is the individual who hosted Muslim ibn Aqil, who was the emissary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam while he was in the city of Kufa, and also that he was imprisoned by Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad when the Battle of Karbala itself took place. There are some, you know, historical aspects about him. Early on, for example, he has, interactions with Imam Ali alayhi salam, where actually his nickname or his technonym of, his epithet of Kaysan was supposedly given to him by Imam Ali alayhi salam, meaning that he was clever, he was intelligent even as a child. He comes from this clan of the Thaqafi, which is a very famous tribe among the Arabs. His relatives were companions of the Messenger of Allah and companions of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Also a very strong tribe, a very powerful tribe. He lived in various cities. Of course, it's supposedly he was born in Ta'if, but he also lived in Mada'in and also lived in Kufa. He's currently buried in Masjid al-Kufa along with Hani ibn Urwa and Muslim ibn Aqil. A very interesting personality in the event of Ashura, especially since he did go and track down the killers of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and took vengeance upon them.
That's right. Mukhtar was not present on the day of Ashura. Mukhtar was not present on the day of Ashura, joining the army of Imam al-Hussein. Is it so, Sheikh Fadal?
Yes, because he was in prison at that time. You know, Mukhtar was one of the people who tried to prepare the situation for Imam, like Muslim Naqil, like Hani ibn Urwa. And as it is mentioned, Muslim Naqil, when entered in Kufa, one of the records of history is that Muslim entered the house of Mukhtar. And the government at that time knew that. They knew that Mukhtar can have a very big role, important role, in the uprising of Imam Hussein. Because of that, they captured him and imprisoned him. And at those days, he was in the prison. He couldn't do anything. But as soon as he was free, he started to continue his way.
Yes.
He started his journey for Imam Hussein before the events of Karbala, and again he continued that after the events. And the revenge was not the only thing that Mukhtar did. Yes, he took revenge from the enemy of Imam Hussein, the army, and he tried a lot, and he was successful to destroy the government of Batel, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad and Yazid. And as you know, it is recorded that he had the government of Kufa for 1 year and a half, for about 18 months. And after that, because of the betrayal of some of the companions, he was killed. So he tried to take back the hukuma, the government, from the hands of Ibn Ziyad and Yazid, not for himself. You know, sometimes we think that Mukhtar was a greedy person who wanted the hukuma for himself. No, it was not like that.
Yes.
He wanted to take back the hukuma and give it to Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
So, but it needed time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we say so, if he wanted to give it back to Imam, why didn't he do that?
Mm-hmm.
Imam was alive at that time, Imam Sajjad.
Imam Sajjad,
but
that's right.
The question is that, was the situation ready completely? You know, the only city at that time was not Kufa.
Mm-hmm.
We had all Hijaz, all Iraq, and we have Sham.
So
Yemen.
That's right, the whole Islamic lands.
He had to prepare the complete situation for Imam. And taking Kufa was the first step. So he was successful in the first step, but what about the continuous step? No, he was not, because of the betrayal. So we cannot blame his personality. He started well before the event of Karbala. He continued well after that, taking revenge and destroying the hukuma of Ibn Ziyad at Kufa, but he wasn't successful to continue. So we cannot blame him.
That's why there are some controversies, for example, regarding his relation to Muhammad al-Hanifiyah or Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam. Was, for example, his actions approved by Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam on that time or not?
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah.
Said Mahdi, a blurry picture is given out of Mukhtar al-Saghafi, but what is known is that he tracked down the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt on that time. And he was only after the enemies of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, those who killed Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, slaughtered Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his companions.
Right. So I think one of the things that is interesting to talk about before this uprising is the idea that so when Mukhtar al-Thaqafi was in the city of Basra, because Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad was originally the governor of Basra.
Yes.
Before he was sent to Kufa to put down this potential uprising that was going to happen. So when both of these individuals, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad and Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, were in Basra, Mukhtar even there was inviting people towards Imam Hussein alayhi salam, which in the city of Basra led him to imprisonment, but also he was whipped apparently 100 times because of his inviting. So from early on, you can tell that Mukhtar was on the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and because of his position in his clan and in his tribe, you know, he was an important individual in his tribe, and his tribe was known for being